Welcome to episode 67 of Photography Insights, your one-stop guide to interviews with people in the photography industry. Before we move on, I'd just like to say a big thank you to you all for listening and supporting the show, and there are a couple of ways you can help it further, which includes leaving an iTunes review and sharing with your friends. In this show, we interview a guy from the other side of the world, in a diverse country called Australia. Denny Smith is not only an Olympus visionary, but someone who shoots long exposure. He creates amazing images of orbs and other sort of patterns, using long exposure and a multitude of tools. What made me want to interview Dennis was his story. It's one of a turbulent past and how a life-changing event made him who he is now. We do talk in an open and brutal manner about mental health with men. And through his meetups and workshops, he teaches new people all about light painting and show them how easy it is to get started and why your do-it-yourself approach is an important part of the process. We had a laugh and he was a great sport through my random questions. So find out why we discuss ski jumping. And as usual, check out the show notes for any links. But more importantly, don't forget to check the website flogger.co.uk for the extra content, which includes Dennis's YouTube video, which is a documentary about himself, and some added photos Dennis has kindly provided. So let's roll the music and away our host. That's me. Welcome to the show, the one and only light painting Dennis Smith.
Hi, Andrew. How are you, mate, from down under?
Yeah, good day, mate. Yeah, good. Thanks a lot for rushing around to get on here with me.
Oh, it's a pleasure, mate. It's Sunday nights down here, and we had a nice family event today, so I'm feeling nice and relaxed, although a bit tired. We had a big light painting meetup last night on the beach that went till the early hours of the morning, so I need a good night's sleep tonight.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. So meetups then, what's going on with this? Is this a new thing?
Yeah, so I've been doing workshops for years, so formally structured events where people pay and come along and I teach them how to do light painting. But in the last sort of 12 months, I've been organizing more casual events. So using social media, I'll organize an event. We call it a light painting meetup, and I make it really clear to people that this is not a workshop. It's you come along, bring your camera, bring a tripod, set it up, and I'll do a bit of a demonstration, and then there'll be other light painters there, and you can mix and mingle with them. And they've just been amazing, Andrew. We last night it was pretty windy and cold, and we had around 120 people came down to the beach.
People,
it's very humbling, mate. Blows me away that I can get that many people together, but they have a great time. Everyone, heaps of kids, which is always awesome.
Oh, great!
Yeah, they love light painting because they get it. Yeah, they understand it, and you know they get to run around with a torch and a light painting tool in their hands.
Yeah, that's cool. It's funny that because my kids are the same. When they see a light painting photo we've done, they're like, oh, can we do that again, daddy? So firework night, we've gone in the garden with what do you call them, it's not sprinklers,
sparklers,
and they love it.
Oh, you know the thing, mate, I when I think about light painting and light painting workshops, there's two groups of people that have always really it has attracted, and they are really young people, so under 12s, okay, and older people. The average age of people that come to my workshop would be about 50, I reckon. And so what it is, young people just get excited by anything, but older, maybe retired photographers, it seems to be reigniting a passion they might have had for photography once, because we all you know, if you're in a photography club or you have a group of photography friends, you do all the standard stuff. You either shoot birds or you do landscape or you go into the city or you go to camera clubs and they do the same five old boring subjects all year. And what I do is I take these people and I just put a light painting tool in their hand and they go nuts for it. Absolutely wild. And and of course, millennials, they know everything. So, you know.
They
get into it as well. That's been the nice thing about doing the meetups is that we've been attracting a lot more teenagers because, you know, teenagers at the moment or teenagers generally don't have $100, $200 to drop on a workshop, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point, isn't it? Because it is a niche thing to do workshops. I know so many people are doing, you know, street photography, like I said to you, dark rooms, and we all want to do it, but it's money, isn't it?
Well, that's the thing, and I, you know, we'll talk about it. We'll talk a bit about this tonight. But I'm at this really special place in my photography career that I can pretty much throw a dart at a map of the world and go anywhere, and hold a workshop or two, and that will pretty much fund my trip. And so I'm working on this model over the next 2 years where I'm going to really mix up workshops with meetups. So, for example, I'm going to come to the UK next year, and mixing up workshops and meetups means we capture both of those ends of the spectrum. Okay. People who have got a bit of money, and so we'll create an event that's a little more special for them because they've paid some money. But then I'll also mix that with meetups, so just anybody can come along, and it'll be a little more relaxed maybe than a workshop, but people will still get to experience putting a tool in their hand, running around like a complete banana, and experiencing what light painting is. And that's all I want to do. That's my life goal now.
Oh, that's awesome. It's just nice that you can give that back as well.
Yeah. Well, it gave, you know, photography in general, but specifically light painting, holds a very, very special place in my heart and in my life. It came to me at a time when I was not well. I was suffering terrible mental issues. I'd had a nervous and mental breakdown in New Zealand, and we had come across to Australia, which is where my wife is from. And I was a mess. I couldn't work. I wasn't functioning properly as a human. And that was 10 years ago. And that's when I picked up a camera for the first time. And mate, quite genuinely, Andrew, it changed my life.
That's amazing. Absolutely amazing story. I mean, for anyone listening, obviously, Dennis' story is being very open with your history, haven't you?
Yeah.
So I would urge anyone to check out the Ball of Light. I will put links in for anyone who wants to go to the website. It's a fascinating insight into, you know, humans, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the thing, and as I get older, you know, I'm 48 now, and as I get older, you know, so photography came to me very late. I was 38 when I first bought a camera, and you know, I came from I was in very high end corporate sales. I worked for a number of large international corporates in sales, so it was super high pressure, a lot of money involved. My income was really high. But I was living a fake life. You know, I was miserably unhappy, constantly struggling to battle anxiety, the pressures of having to succeed. You know, I'm doing invert air quotes there, succeed. And I had a really weird vision of what success meant. And so what happens is when you have a collapse or you have a fall, all of that gets stripped away. You don't have any choice. Because you can't pay the mortgage anymore. You can't pay the lease on the car. You can't afford the $3,000 suits. And so what you're left with is just you and your mind. And I was lucky enough at that point to have a wife and a family who held me up. Unfortunately, we also live in an age where suicide amongst men at the point I was in my life is rife. And so I was very lucky to not end up down that route. But it's what it's taught me, Andrew, is that the more that we as humans talk about those situations or those pressures. You know, I the 1st of November, I celebrated 10 years of sobriety. You know, photography was a massive influence on me stopping drinking. I had a problem with that. I thought that was fixing my mental health issues, but it wasn't. Yeah. And I talk about that a lot. And not, I'm not a recovered alcoholic, but the more we talk about these things and how life can be different, not always better. I still struggle terribly with depression and a bit of bipolar. But the more that I stand in front of rooms of people, and specifically men, and explain to them that there is another, you can come out the other side okay, the more it makes it acceptable to even think about it and put your hand up and ask for help. And we live in a great time, I think, in our society globally, where that's becoming an acceptable conversation for men to have.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think the world's changed in that sense, and we need to be more open, because all of us have had issues. I myself had some issues in my 30s, and to be honest, I'm similar to you in the sense my family made me so strong.
Yeah,
it's been amazing to have kids, because your focus is on them, giving them something good, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, and I think in generations past, if any member of a family was struggling with mental health, we were taught to keep it quiet and not talk about it, especially as men. It was weak to talk about your feelings. It was weak to talk about your if you were struggling, you know, you didn't cry, you didn't tell the family, you went and hid away. And unfortunately, mate, the path a lot of people go down is they try and fix it with drugs and alcohol, you know, because it's an easy fix. It numbs it quickly. But, you know, we're not there yet. The rates of suicide amongst all humans is at record levels, especially here in Australia. It's terrible. And again, it's something that the more we talk about it, the more we, you know, and bringing it back to photography. So for me, I reach out to people and bring them to sometimes small groups or large groups, or, you know, I've just come back from a European trip, and I'm in a fantastic situation where people want to have me at their events or at their large photography events, because not only do I bring some skills around photography and light painting stuff, but I'm also really open about talking about the link between photography and good mental health. And I it blows me away. We get the opportunity to have that question, and constantly I have people coming up to me afterwards going, and amazing how many women who are there with their husbands going, oh my God, thank you for even just saying the words. so that's kind of my story, is I came from a place of real darkness, and now it's just full of light, and all I want is to use my skills I've learned with photography and light painting to try and bring as much light to as many people as I can on the face of this planet.
Oh, that's awesome, mate. I think everyone has to do the bit. And I think you're right that people like yourself that have experienced stuff, that, you know, you become a role model in essence, probably without realizing.
Yeah, and it's a it, look. It, I know that is a part of it. It brings its own stresses and pressures. But in real terms, man, if by being open and being honest about these things, we can help one person to pick up, to hold their hand up and ask for help. That's it, really. You know, I'd much rather be doing that than being a salesman again, trying to get everyone's money and just see them as a dollar sign. That's revolting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think that's another nice thing, that although you have built your own products and it's part of your brand, you're putting back by going out there and teaching people. And like this workshop idea is lovely, mate. The meetup idea is lovely.
Yeah. Thank you.
I have to say, I'm so thankful for Gina Militia for putting me in contact with you. So.
Yeah. Well, we met at a big photography festival here in Australia, and okay. I didn't know of Gina until we met at the first festival, and then we met there, and then we did her podcast, which is great. She's an amazing woman. We were at the same festival again this year, and it was amazing how we kind of reconnected. She's a very strong woman who's also a massive advocate for being open and honest about these things. She's gorgeous, Gina.
Yeah, she really surprised me that she was so open, because to me, she's on the other side of the planet, but she's an international person, and she agreed to come on. And like, is she just going to be a sales sort of person and promoting herself? She was totally normal. We've had quite a few emails. It's lovely.
I reckon you've just made me think of something. Our community, and the thing for me is photography came to me through the internet. So I discovered light painting on Flickr. There's an incredible group that still exists called Light Junkies. And I discovered Light Junkies about 3 months after I bought my first camera, and that was exactly how I got hooked. It was a tiny community back then. But that's where light painting kind of flourished. And isn't it amazing, mate, how I have some pretty strong views on social media that we may or may not touch on in this podcast, but one of the beautiful things about social media is that it allows people from the other side of the world, like you and I now and your listeners, you and Gina, but even at home, me and the 100+ people who came to the beach last night, if it wasn't for social media, these connections would be very hard to make. And I feel so grateful for the age that I live in. Imagine in the old days when it was, you're putting ads in magazines.
I'd have wrote you a letter.
Yeah, like if you wanted to do a meetup, you'd have to put an ad in, Photography UK, or something like that. We're very lucky. I've just come back from Europe and spent some time in Spain and Germany with light painters who I met online, and now we have real world, real time connections and in the flesh, and I'm so grateful for that. Because Adelaide, anyone that's listening, have a look on a globe where Adelaide is. It is literally the asshole of the world.
Yeah.
Most beautiful place, but we're at the bottom of the planet.
Yeah, it's a long, long way. It's funny that the first meetup I did with a few lads, I started walking the streets of Lincoln at night, first got my camera, and I came across, I think, three lads. And he's like, oh, we're just going to do some light painting. I didn't know what the hell he was on about. So we did it near the cathedral here. So the cathedral's a massive thing. It's 1,000 years old. It was the biggest place in Europe in the Middle Ages. Wow. So it's a massive, massive place. And he started doing some orbs and things like this. And I was like, wow. So my first experience, really, of photography is light painting.
That's amazing.
It's quite cool. So, I understand, put your camera on manual, focus, f5.6 is a starting point.
Yep.
Bang on. And I can set up in seconds in the living room with the girls or go in the garden. Yep. It's ace.
The beautiful thing about light painting is that when I first started, we made everything. So it was total experimentation. There was, I still have somewhere around here the very first light painting tool I ever made. It was just this piece of aluminium strip with a 9-volt battery and some LEDs, and I didn't even know how to solder the LEDs. I just figured it out. And so in the early communities, it just by the nature of having to design and put things together, it became a really sharing community of sharing ideas and tools and ways to do things. I manufacture, and there's a few guys around the world who manufacture a huge range of light painting tools for people that don't have either the time or the skill. But I'm a massive, massive advocate for people having a go at making their own things. You can get a very cheap you know, I'll use pounds, you know, 3-pound torch from a hardware store, some duct tape and a drink bottle, and you join them together and there's a light painting tool, you know.
Yeah.
It you can make very, very cheap light painting tools and create magic, you know, absolute magic.
Yeah, it's cool. I actually bought some little key rings about probably about an inch big. They're all colored plastic around them. So I put them in a long chain, just spin it, bang, done.
Yeah.
Like you say, it's ingenuity, and I think that has to be part of it.
Oh, it's part of the fun. Like a great example is this. I have a tool called the Ball of Light tool, and it's an orb creation tool that I've developed over 8 years. It's magical. It works beautifully. It does all these colors and all that sort of thing. But it's not cheap, right?
Yeah.
And so when you buy that, you get a tutorial. But I did a Ball of Light masterclass, and it's on my website. You can, if you're into spinning orbs, you can go watch it. It's an hour of me to the finest detail teaching you how to do an orb. But the very, very first thing I do is I show two tools. One is a glow stick on the end of a bit of string, and the other is, I think, some Christmas lights or something. So the very first thing I do is go, I do make this tool, but you don't have to use that. You can experiment and play yourself. And so that, even now, 10 years later, there's still, I think amongst most hardcore light painters, there's still this sort of deep desire for people to have that tool making, you know, a part of the light painting process. Which is magical. You know, I've got a pretty substantial workshop here, and we still get together some nights, me and my friends, and we just muck around designing and coming up with new ideas, attaching torches to all sorts of crazy things.
It's part of it, without a doubt, yeah. I quite like wire wool as well.
Sorry, who?
Wire wool.
Oh, yes. Well, I it's funny you should mention that. I have a pretty strong opinion of steel. We call it steel wool here. It's really dangerous.
It is, yeah.
It is stupid, and especially we were down the beach last night, and there were some people doing it. That's about the only place that is safe to do it. Now, I know in the UK it rains like 320 days a year or something, but here in Australia and in a lot of dry places, it's just super dangerous. We're currently suffering some horrific bushfires in Australia that killed some people yesterday. And so my view on steel wool is a complicated one, for fear of people that are super smart heading out and causing some trouble. But if you're safe and you're smart with it, it can be a huge amount of fun.
We got the safety warning in there. Don't try this at home.
Good. That's all I need to do. Yeah. Look, mate, I'm horrified that one day someone will go out and start a fire, and when they're asked how they did it, that my name gets brought up. So at my workshops and events, and my organized workshops, you're not allowed. We don't have any steel wool.
I know, that's fair enough. Yeah. I mean, I tried it. I met up with my brother and I said, you hold that and spin that. Next thing you know, there's flames going everywhere, nearly caught me. And it's like, like you say, it's so wet here.
That's the thing. If it's wet or it's been raining or whatever, it's fine.
Yeah. It's a good time to do it as well, because you get a lot of reflections as well, puddles and stuff.
Yeah. Oh. Look, in the ocean, I've got a series called Liquid Light. So I take my light painting into the ocean. So I take my cameras and tripods and I put them in the water. The camera is sitting about 3 or 4 inches. I think that's upright in UK, above the water. And then I'm about 10 feet away. With a set of tools that I've designed specifically for in the water, and I'm in there splashing away. This summer I'm going to take some steel wool into the water, and experiment a bit with actually doing it out in the ocean, and just see what different effects I can get with the steel wool even further out into the water.
I think it's the next stage after messing about and playing is you need like a concept of what you want to achieve, isn't it? And I think like any photography, you have to come to a point where, right, I've got a plan, this is what I want to do. And yeah, I've seen some good ones like Tron. Can you remember the old film Tron?
Yeah.
So how would you do, like, say you wanted to pretend to spin a disc at someone and you see the whole flame. How do you do things like that?
So I regularly mix strobe photography with light painting. So I do a lot of portraits, and so you'll have a big softbox or you have a torch with a shield on it, and so you lock the person into the frame using that, and then once that's gone, they're in the dark, and then you can do all sorts of stuff, throw things, move things, wrap them in light and bits and pieces. But you're right about. I think about light painting like this, and I forget sometimes to refer back to my own work. And when people think about a Dennis Smith light painting, people think about, not first of all, of course, they think about the orbs, but then they think about large, big, open landscapes. And I, early on, that became my thing, was because it was mixed in with me going out and trying to heal and be out in
nature. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, like I was escaping out into nature and doing my light painting, and I discovered that under a full moon or under a bright moon, you know, after a 3-minute exposure, it's like daylight. And so what happened really quickly, because I was so new to photography, I was almost teaching myself how to be a landscape photographer and then inserting light painting into it. And pretty quickly, in the first 6 months or a year, I was going looking for inspiration or skill sets, I was looking at landscape photographers, not light painters. And what I wanted to do is I wanted to create images that if you removed the light painting from it, it would still be a compelling photograph. And that's what I got, is I learned, yeah, and I went seeking out. So, you know, we went across to Europe. I did a lap of the Alps and under a full moon. And we went to Easter Island last year, and we timed that with the full moon, and Angkor Wat in Cambodia. So all of my trips now sync up with the full moon, so that you get those big open landscapes with light painting in it. And one of the things with that, Andrew, is that it plays with the mind, because the very first thing that you think if you're seeing those images and you know anything about photography is that it's just a composite. So look at my images and it's just a landscape photo with light painting in it, when every single image that I've ever created and shown, except for a half a dozen, which I'm very open about, they're always a raw image. They're never a composite.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I'm really passionate about
it. That's good. I mean, I know when I looked at a couple of them, I was thinking, is that a long exposure or has he done that in the day? And I was like, but obviously now we know.
Well, the stars are always a giveaway. You'll always see stars in there, and that is the giveaway. And I've been playing a little bit with Astro now, so the middle of this month, I'm heading away into the Australian outback for 5 days, working on a very top secret project where I've been, the brief is to go and do light painting under Astro. And so that's like completely, for me, that's like totally 180 degrees. It's like, what do you mean? Oh my God, it's going to be dark. But now it, for me, that's one of the new challenges, because it's fresh and new and hard for me. And I love those challenges.
No, that's cool. I mean, at the end of the day, like even light painting to me is another form of long exposure.
Yeah, totally it is. Well, it is. It's just long exposure photography. My liquid light stuff are 2 or 3 second exposures, but for a lot of people, that's still long exposure.
Oh, it is. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It is. And when I'm in the studio, so I have a behind me here is a black studio, and then when I'm in here, I use a method called the intervalometer method. And so my most cameras now, but I'm an Olympus stills camera user, and it has a built-in function to take time-lapse images. So you set it to 1 or 2 seconds, and then there's a delay. And what I'll do often is I'll point one or two cameras into the dark, and then I'll just go in with a tool and just start moving with some music and get into a flow. It's almost meditative, and the camera is clicking away, taking two-second exposures, and then you come out with a series of swishes or swirls or light painting images, and then you go in and you pluck the ones out that are really nice. And I'm really open about that technique. That's the technique I use when I'm in the water as well.
Okay. That's cool. I think because you sort of in the dark yourself, and you what I always say to people about light painting is you're actually drawing light onto it. So it's literally like a white piece of paper, and you're drawing with a pencil. To me, that's exactly
it. Yep. When I'm doing workshops, I always open the workshops by going through the tools, and then I do some demonstrations with a big screen so people can see it, and I describe it exactly as that. Light painting is using different shapes, different shaped and colored tools, and the night is your canvas. And so if you have a tool that is a green rectangle, it's like picking up a brush, a big broad brush, and using green ink. If you're using a piece of fiber optic, it's like watercolor or whatever. And if you start thinking about that, things get really crazy. But then the beautiful thing about light painting, and this may sound ridiculously obvious when I say it, but light painting goes into three dimensions. So there's not just the left and right in the frame. You can come in and out from the camera. You're creating depth and shape. Yeah, you got it. And at workshops, it's incredible seeing what happens when people go, oh, right, yeah, duh. Just things start to get really funky. Great. Cool. And there's some amazing artists who that's kind of their specialty.
Well, we tended to do it. So we might go in an abandoned building, or we might go in a dark room. Yeah. And one of my friends, the one who taught me, he would go in by himself, say 12 o'clock at night, 2 o'clock in the morning. He would take a beer with him to have a bit of Dutch courage, as we call it. And he would do multiple layers. So he would probably have an orb. He'd have some swirling patterns. He would always freeze himself in the frame. And then sometimes he had eggs at the side of him. It would literally take him 5 to 10 minutes just to do one shot.
Yep, absolutely. It can be. Look, when I was just in Germany for an event, and I met up with a guy who I don't use this word very often, but I've idolized this guy for many, many, many years, and his name is Sam Mass, and he is a calligraphy. He does calligraphy light painting, and I had seen his work for years, and for the first time ever, I saw his. I saw him creating the work, and we were just together, him and I, in a black studio, and he was creating all this calligraphy. And that takes just what you were talking about to an entirely new level. This guy, Jesus. It's like when he moves the tool through the air, it's burning into his retina, because he can create these phenomenally elaborate light painting images that are perfect. It is a wonder to see. I'll get you the link to it in the show notes. He's designing it. I'm tattooing one of his calligraphies onto me soon. He's amazing, and he does light painting portraits using calligraphy. And he did one of me while I was there, and I will treasure it for the rest of my life. He's a French guy. He's the coolest man alive. He's like, I am Sam Mass. He's great. There's a lot of interesting people in our light painting community.
Yeah, I think it's very different people, to be fair. I mean, come on, to do this stuff at night as well, you can't see what you're doing. I mean, it's like being blindfolded, isn't it?
Well, it is, mate. And I reckon I can now see in the dark a lot better than most people. I can, my eyes have certainly become used to it. It's wonderful. I mean, I was going to say we're kind of lucky down here. It gets dark. I'm planning a trip to the UK for next year, and one of the things that we work around whenever I'm traveling somewhere is obviously when the moon is, but also I've become aware that in the UK and in the north, when you get far north, it doesn't get dark till really late sometimes, like late at night, and so we have to obviously work around that as well.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it has to be very late winter because it's just, there's too much ambient light without a doubt. That's hence why we used to do it in buildings and things like that, or a corner of the cathedral sort of thing. And it worked really well. I know when we first did it, another thing I did by myself was I just light painted my car. I went to a dark lane. And just with my phone or torch. And I looked back at it and I was like, that looks like an artist has drawn it.
Like a
sketch, like the mock-ups they do when they're designing cars.
You got it. And it's one of those things, again, mate, like I sell 2,000 lumen beast torches and you can spend a lot of money on coloured filters and all this sort of thing. If you buy a cheap £3 torch and you get a bread bag or a piece of cellophane or anything that's plastic with color on it and you put it over the torch, all of a sudden you've got a light painting tool that's going to light your car or your building or whatever up with color on it. I mean, there's just so many amazing ways to light paint. And of course, the thing you're talking about with actually light painting a car, well, that's light painting. It's almost like you're using the torch and the light coming out of the torch to actually paint stuff. Mm. And when you start getting your head around that, it can be so incredibly rewarding. So rewarding.
It's quite dangerous though as well, because I fell over doing it.
it can be dangerous. Well, yeah. I've got a very good friend in the UK. His name's Phil Fisher. And he's an incredibly talented light painter. And he's tried so many different genres, but one of the things he's doing at the moment, which absolutely is blowing my mind, you have a lot of old, like you're saying, cathedrals and ruins and castles and stuff. He'll go out with something as simple as his camera, a tripod, and one pretty bright torch, and he will go and light these churches up, and it is it's astonishingly beautiful. He's taught me some pretty cool things. He's also doing some pretty nice work with drones, drone light painting, and camera rotations. He convinced me.
That's another thing.
I came back from my trip to Spain and Germany, and the first thing I bought when I got back was all the equipment to do some. I'm going to teach myself how to do rotations. They're amazing.
The same friend I was saying about, he did it. So, I mean, obviously, it was cheap equipment. He used his camera to work out the 90 degrees, 180. And he was doing it. We'd just go down the high street and it'd be like, lights, let's have that. Yeah, it was really talented.
The cool thing about that I love about the rotations is that it's all the goal for most light painters, and my goal always is to get the image in a single exposure. So that means not only rotating the camera, but lens capping. So you do the exposure. you put the lens cap back on, you rotate the camera 40 degrees or whatever it is, you take the lens cap off, and it starts exposing again. Yeah, it's just beautiful, and it's very technical. But we created some images while I was in Spain that still absolutely blow my mind. And for me, I've been around light painting for a while. To blow my mind is... It takes a bit, but I think again, Andrew, it's one of the beautiful things about our genre of photography is that for an old guy like me who's been doing it for 10 years, I can still go down massive rabbit holes with light painting that both inspire me, challenge me to push my own work. And that's, I think as creatives, that's what we're always looking for, is that inspiration to try something new or to experience something that pushes us.
I'm exactly the same. Every time I talk to someone from a different genre, I'm thinking I've maybe done a little bit of it, and then you start investigating, and like you say, God, it's like Alice in Wonderland. Oh. It really is.
Yeah. And if I go back to the original, or when I first started light painting 10 years ago, it was a little different back then, because it was almost felt like everything we were doing was new and fresh and exciting. But quite genuinely, mate, I 99% of what I see come through my Instagram feed is absolute bullshit. But I still, every day, I'll see someone doing light painting that I will pause and see it and genuinely go, whoa, okay. I might have a crack at that to see if I can A, figure out how they did it, and see if I can either try to push it further or something like that. It's wonderful. And I encourage anyone that's listening who is a photographer in any genre, by going and having a look at light painting images and trying to discover how it's done, it will add to your own photography. I have no doubt about that. I'm a commercial photographer. I have a commercial photography and video business. And I'm always, the two always cross over. I use a lot of strobe photography and I use long exposure in my commercial work. And it's all the same thing. We're just lighting the scene.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think there is that big link between long exposure, flash, and then playing the light. So what I'm going to do is just put one on the screen for you. So this is the guy I was talking about we did together. So I've just put on Dennis's screen. It's on my website under experimental photography. And it's a picture I did in a old World War II bunker.
Gorgeous.
And that was basically long exposure with six flashes.
Yeah.
So one flash six times. I kept moving between the seats.
Yeah.
And then there's another shot after it that he did where we put smoke in the room and he put his famous alien in there, and then there was all sorts going on. It's like...
It's all experimenting, mate. This is something that I often forget to talk about, but I think is one of the most important things in photography in 2019. For so many people, especially people starting out in photography, we use social media, whether it's Instagram or Facebook or Flickr, mm-hmm. or whatever your flavor of social media is. We use that as a place to go to see what is photography to see what photography is. And one thing that I stress to people really, really almost aggressively is when I look at this image that you shared with me, you probably didn't get it right on the first attempt. No. There was probably one or two, or you were getting your exposure, getting your flash settings right. So, leading up to this image, there might have been 5, 6, or 10 tries. Yes. And something I stress to people really, really heavily is when you go look at my Instagram feed, I promise you that either side of every single image that you see is 50 to 100 absolutely pieces of shit photographs. you only get to see the gold. I like to think I do share some of the duds, but the reality is that in my Lightroom feed and the Lightroom feed of any photographer is 99% of stuff that will only ever see the hard drive, will never see the light of day. And so one thing I've stressed to people who are either experienced photographers and starting to think that they might be losing it, or people that are new to photography, is only ever think that the images that you see from photographers, I think about it like this. I said to someone the other day, you know what happens when you put a drop of water on the top of oil? You get this incredible colorful
colors.
Swirling. You get these swirling colors. Mm. And I like to think that when you look at my photography, all you're seeing is that thin layer of beautiful color. The rest of it is dark, horrible gray oil. And below every beautiful photograph is a lot of duds, a lot of attempts, a lot of tries. And so I always encourage people that you know, don't think that things come easy. Take some time, experiment. We live in a digital age. I've never put a roll of film in a camera in my life. I've never owned a film camera. And so I've only ever known this beautiful time where you can just smash out images. You can keep trying and keep trying. You can change the f-stop, and you know, you can use high ISO. You can experiment really and just push boundaries that I imagine 10, 15, 20 years ago was really quite tricky if you were just using film.
Definitely. I mean, I've tried a bit of long exposure with film, and I didn't know there was something called it's failure in film. So,
reciprocity.
Yes, that's the word. I won't even try and say it. Yeah, so I didn't know it existed. And then when I looked at my pictures, I was like, oh, they're a bit dark.
And
every film is different. So for me, I want to get to the point where I can shoot in film or digital and you not notice the difference. And that's going to be a long journey for me.
Yeah, look, I'm in a very fortunate position in my photography where I'm an international visionary with Olympus. And Olympus engaged with me because I think they enjoyed how vocal I was about the fact that you don't need super mega cameras to make amazing images. You know, when I started my commercial photography career, I thought you had to have fancy pants cameras to be a good photographer. So I went down the path of buying all the latest big full frame gear, big long lenses, and spending thousands and thousands of dollars on gear. And then someone handed a little Olympus camera to me one day, and I went out into the outback and into the mountains, and oh my God, it didn't weigh anything. And I was like, this is the future for me. You know, and I was coming back with amazing photographs. And so I say to people all the time, I don't care if you're using a little basic Nikon DSLR or a little mirrorless camera or a bloody Hasselblad. Great images come from experimenting, by being bold, by being confident. I experiment all the time. I regularly will take a little Olympus EM10 camera, which is their absolute base model.
But
I'll take that out light painting with me. I'll create a light painting image with it, and I'll put it on my social media. And I promise you, Andrew, no one knows. No one has a clue. Yeah. And I still get the same likes, and I still get the same comments, because it's a compelling photograph. They're looking at the images, and they're going, what the hell is this? They're not looking at it going, ooh, I've seen 50 of those. What makes this one better or worse? And start looking at pixel peeping. You know, I don't mind that. You know, I print big. I regularly print big 2-meter prints, right? Wow. And I did a blog post recently. There's a big gallery here. There's a large photography gallery in Australia which exhibited my work, and they told me they wanted to print them 2 meters wide, and all of the images came off my Micro Four Third Olympus cameras. And I went over to Melbourne and had a look at them. They were faultless, absolutely gorgeous. And they were huge. And yes, they might have been different if I was using a 100 megapixel Fuji or Hasselblad camera. But the reality was, it was a super successful exhibition because people were looking at them for what they were. They were different, compelling, big landscapes with light painting in them or liquid light photographs that people were looking at them and trying to figure out what the hell they were looking at, not trying to figure out why they were a bad photograph.
Yeah. I don't know why we get obsessed with that, because like you say, that the people buying are not the technical people.
I'll tell you something. It's something I'm quite vocal about. We have been, as a photography community, we have been brainwashed that things like noise, things like pixel count matter, because that is what is being fed to us by the marketing departments of large camera companies, because that's all they've got left to try and sell you a camera. They don't. When you walk into a camera store and you see the latest camera from any manufacturer, why the hell are you going to buy that camera? Because and replace yours? Well, the guy behind the counter is going to tell you that this one has less noise, or it's a 40 megapixel sensor. They have to tell you something. And so all of a sudden, in all of the marketing material, people talk about noise mainly and stuff, because that's all they've got left to talk about. You know, noise is, it infuriates me. This fascination that people have with noise. I call bullshit on that. You know, I have created images that I'm using air quotes here, that are noisy as all hell. But two things. Firstly, I never would have got the image unless I was using that high ISO. So you're seeing the image because I used it, right? And no one ever comments on those photos, whether they're in print or they're on social media, and talking about noise. The only person that ever sees noise in an image is you.
Yeah.
I'm really passionate about that. Mate, if people are seeing noise, your image is shit. You're not making a good photograph. They're focusing on that, you know. And so I encourage, and at my workshops, I encourage people. Yeah, I when I see someone pull a 5-year-old little Micro Four Third DSLR or a really basic camera, I'm so excited, because I know by the end of the night they're gonna realize that it doesn't matter. You know, they've had a great time. They've made images they never could have made any other way because they're light painting. I tell them, don't even think about looking at the noise. Put it on your social media, and I promise that people will engage with it. Because it's something different from you. And universally it's true, you know. It's universally true. And mate, anyone that goes on social media and comments about noise in an image, block them. You don't need those people in your life. Get rid of them. They're trolls.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, there's just some stupid people.
Oh, there are. And you can make a good image with a 12 megapixel sensor.
Yeah. Well, I shoot with a 13-year-old camera. And it is 10.8 mega, I think.
Yeah, that's heaps.
And I don't think most people would notice what technology I've used. So I'm trying to go away from saying what I use from now on. And in actual fact, for a laugh, I put a film shot in a digital group to see if anyone would pick up on it.
Yeah.
No one did.
No. Well, my very first camera was a Canon 450D. I know in Europe they use that. In America they have a different but basically what it was the most basic DSLR I could afford as my first camera. Now I took 80,000 images on that first camera. All of the light painting images that started off my career and still get attention today were created with that camera. And I'm looking at it now. It sits here in my studio. I will sometimes go and fire that thing up, put a little nifty 50mm lens on it, take it out and do a light painting with it, and put it onto my social media and not say a word. And the same as you. No one says a thing because it doesn't matter. No one cares.
Yeah, it's crazy because when you put photos like that in other groups, people say, oh, well done for you. For using something like that, and I'm thinking, you know, it should be irrelevant.
Should be.
Come to a shoot with me, and you'll see we all do the same stuff. We all have a good laugh, and we all get good results because it's.
And that's it.
Yeah, it's just light, isn't it?
Yeah. Make photography about having fun. I have a term I use for a lot of my events, and it's love, love, light, and laughs, and. That's it. I just want people to have fun. I want them to feel loved when they're there, and I want them to leave and share the love with other people, and I want them to have a bloody good time. And universally, we always have a laugh. I'm always mucking around and taking the piss. And, it doesn't matter where I am in the world. Even in Germany, where I had a room, I think there were like 40 people in this room at a workshop, and they were just standing, they were like stone. But I just continue being a complete goose. And I know they're having a good time, but anywhere in the world, like, photography is universal.
Yeah, it's surprising, isn't it? Yeah, it's what it should be. It should be fun, and my shoot's a part of it, and then I've turned it into something. Podcasting, I want everyone to have a good time. I want, you know, yourself to have a good time when we're talking, because I always say to people, the show's about my guest, not me.
Yeah, well, that and you're bringing good people together, an interesting mix, which is great.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, we are now part of the show where I'm going to put you through my random questions.
Oh my God, I've heard about these. I'm anxious. I'm anxious and quietly excited. Let's go.
Same as most people, I think. Okay. Well, I always try to think about them because sometimes the subject matter doesn't relate to the country you're in. So I have to be very careful.
It's all right.
So here it goes. Instead of national service, you have to take part in the Olympics. So what event and why?
Well, you're right. We don't have national service down here, but I know exactly what it is. Well, I thought about this I thought about the Winter Olympics, and it would be the ski jump. Because it's the most ridiculously extreme thing that I could possibly imagine doing. It was the most insane thing I could think of. And I that's me, to a T. I would slide down that hill and fly like a complete nut, but I would have LED lights. I'd have LED lights trailing.
My God.
Yeah, so it'd be.
Yeah, it's you, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. It would be great.
I could actually see. Oh, God, someone's going to have to do that someday for you. Even if it's a small ramp. That's awesome. You've been commissioned by someone you know and trust. Yep. They say if you press a button at a certain time and they will call you, they will wire you $1 million. But you're not allowed to ask any questions. What do you do?
But you say it's someone I trust?
Yes.
I push the button, mate.
You would?
I wouldn't hesitate. I'd be in there. And it's not about the money. I mean, $1 million would be quite nice. It means I'd be able to come on. I'd do a tour of Europe. Yeah. But yeah, I'd press the button. I mean, life's for living, mate. Life's for a bit of risk.
That's good. Yep, someone else is exactly the same thing. So that's interesting, yeah. If you could move a country, which one would you move nearer to Australia?
Oh, my. If I could move a country nearer to Australia, mate, it would have to be Egypt.
Okay.
I wouldn't hesitate on that. And I'll tell you why. Because then no tourists would come to it, and I would have it all to myself to go and wander around the old temple's light painting.
Oh, man.
That would be me. I could spend the rest of my life, I reckon, along the River Nile and never, ever, never run out of places to create amazing images. I fantasize about going to Egypt, but I balk all the time because I hear stories of just how difficult it is to get around. And of course, the hard thing is, mate, is as a light painter, you've got to be in these places at night. And so sometimes I must admit, just quietly, there was a small wedge of US dollars changed hands to get me into Angkor Wat temple that night in Cambodia. But no, mate, Egypt for sure. I'd bring it just off the coast of South Australia, and I'd be hanging out there every night for a few years.
We'll see what we can do for you, mate. You're celebrating your granddaddy's 90th birthday. He wants to spend it doing something with you. It's either a strip joint, smoking weed, or a bungee jump? Which one?
Strip club. And I tell you why, not for me, of course, not for me, but you know, a 90-year-old granddaddy, 90, you know what, you know, it might zest him up a little bit, you know. He might not have experienced it before. Now, here's a true story. This afternoon I spent the day with my father-in-law, and he's 86.
Wow.
And we took them up to the Gold Coast in Australia for I think it was their 50th wedding anniversary or something. And for a laugh, I think he was about 75 or something. My brother-in-law and I put him in a cab and we took him to a strip club. And I tell you what, this is a guy who's probably only ever seen his own wife in a nighty. He had the best time ever, just quietly.
Wow.
He thought it was pretty rad. He thought they were very interesting how they danced.
That's awesome. That's a great idea.
Oh, he thought it was a hoot. And of course, you know, when you're 75 years old plus, you know, your scruples are kind of going. All I was doing was making sure he had a drink on him. I was, you know, just tending to him.
Oh, you're such a good friend.
Thank you very much.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you. Each country is a different drink. So what drink would Australia be and why?
Oh, beer, mate.
Yeah, I shouldn't have asked that one. That's bloody obvious.
Well, it's an interesting thing. So I don't drink any alcohol.
Of course,
But I hang out with people all the time who do, and I do enjoy being at a pub. Yeah. But in South Australia, it would be red wine. And just this afternoon I was my wife's family's from the Barossa Valley, which is a world famous wine region, and we were there today. So in South Australia it would be red wine, but I think Australia as a country, I think we're pretty good at drinking beer. Pretty good.
It's confessional Sunday. Tell me one of your photography sins and the Lord will consider absolving you.
I always clean my lenses with my with the bottom of my t-shirt, and every time photographers see me do that, they cringe. But they especially cringe when we're at places like on the beach or where it's super super dusty. And I tell you what, I am hopeless. I buy lens cloths. I have people give me bags of them, but they just vaporize. I can never find the thing. So, yeah, that's my sin.
I think I'll absolve you of that because I do that as well.
Thank you, mate. Please. I feel a lot better now.
And your final one. Yeah. You get to either give a punch, a present, or a pint. So do you understand pint?
I do.
Awesome. To each of the following. So you've got Dennis Law, the famous footballer.
Yeah.
Dennis Hopper and Dennis Rodman.
And I can give them either a
punch, a present, or a pint.
Oh, my God. Well, Dennis Rodman would get a pint because he's a madman.
Crazy.
I love the guy. He's just gorgeous.
I can't believe his career changed so much.
Well, he's Kim Jong-un's right-hand man now, I think.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Dennis Hopper would probably get a punch because he's also a madman. I reckon we'd have a good fight. We'd end up wrestling on the ground, but Hopper's a huge amount of fun. And who's the first guy? I don't know that person.
Oh, Dennis Law is a very famous UK footballer from 1966.
He'd have a pint, wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he would. I mean, they probably had pints before the matches back then.
Back then they would have had a ciggy.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
That was fun.
Oh, thanks a lot for that, mate. That was good fun.
Yeah.
So we're now at the point of the show where, and I'll give you the opportunity to tell everybody where we can find you online. So if you want to go ahead, Dennis.
Yeah, so I really, there's two places that I am most of the time, and my website, I'm a little bit old school. I know there's a big trend away from social media at the moment, mm-hmm. so I put a lot of time and effort into my website, which is balloflight.com.au. So that's just my balloflight.com.au. And the website's really cool. You know, obviously I have a shop where I sell my stuff, but that's where you can join the mailing list, which which is really fun. But there's a tutorial section. And in that section, I have a whole lot of tutorials on how to do light painting, little tips and tricks. It links through to my YouTube channel. And there's a nice little about me section, which talks about my life change. So that's my number one place. But then Instagram is my go-to. So my Instagram is the Ball of Light as well. I'm sure you'll link to it. Facebook, not so much. I'm moving away from Facebook pretty quickly, like a lot of people. That's certainly now where I go when I'm organizing events and workshops. But yeah. I have a workshop section on the website. But yeah, so Instagram and my website are the two best to find me. And I'm a very accessible guy. If you want to have a crack at light painting or you've had a crack and you're not sure, you know, I'm pretty available through social media. I answer as many questions as I can, and I like to see people trying new things.
That's awesome. I think we'll have to put a couple of your photos on the link as well, to be honest, because it'll make sense for people who maybe haven't tried light painting, were it?
Sounds great. And we'll pop some cool bits and pieces up there.
Yeah, that's cool. So my final question, as you know, I do this pay it forward scheme. Who would you like to see on a future episode? Put me in touch with maybe someone different, or
man, I have a fellow Olympus visionary in Victoria, in Melbourne, and he is Chris is his name. I'd have to look at his second name, but I'm not sure what the term is over there, but he photographed nudes or boudoir. But what I love about his work and what I love about him is he is one of the rare people who takes women and creates absolutely incredible images of them, but they are empowering, and he desexualizes photographing the nude. And I've talked to him about his process, and mm-hmm. I think his work is incredible, and I think he's got a beautiful story to tell about how, in this age of social media, where young women are led to believe that what matters, and he talks beautifully about how that doesn't matter so much, and he empowers women to be strong and beautiful.
Oh, that sounds awesome, mate! Yeah, absolutely wicked.
Yeah, so I'll try and hook you up with him.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. So all I say is thanks a lot for spending a bit of time, Dennis. It's been an absolute blast. I hope everyone's learned from you.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure, and I really hope that your listeners feel inspired to maybe have a go at some light painting or just to. You know, even just explore a different genre, you know, find some light painting groups, have a look at my work, and just try and be, you know, I hope I inspire someone to have a go. That's all I want.
Yeah, I hope so. So let me know when you come into the UK. We'll get that advertised, and I'll try and get a day off and come and see you, mate. It'll be awesome.
That'd be amazing. 2020.
Awesome. Right. Well, I'm going to go have some dinner now with my children, and you have a good night, mate.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Dennis.